Hello, hello, my loves, and welcome to another episode of Cocktail Conversations with Shannon. Listen, it's been a while since I've been back. Not a real while, actually, like maybe a week. Honey, it took me this long to get to where I could have a cocktail. Those of you who are not from the Tampa Bay area may or may not be familiar with the celebration we have called Gasparilla. We just had Gasparilla, and I've had friends that live in other parts of the state or other parts of the nation, and even clients that I was like, oh, I can't, I have plans. It's Gasparilla. They go, what is that? And I feel embarrassed explaining, oh, it's a big celebration of a fictional pirate, and we celebrate him coming in to invade our town. And everybody you know is going to go out and party in the streets for the day. It's pretty much the agenda for the week. So that was last weekend. I partook. Joined some friends and loved ones, went back home to Tampa this weekend, as well as working with a lot of clients. And so I have not been home for an extended period of time because I've been out, as my grandma would say, gallivanting around Central Florida. But I'm thankful to be back in my abode. Actually, I just got back from Tampa today. I had to go check on my grandpa. I've been ripping and running. Also, another quote from my grandmother. But I am glad to be in one place because I have a lot I want to talk about with you guys. And as a reminder, I want you to talk back. You can always email me at cocktailconvo7@gmail.com. You can also reach out to me there's a description box. There's a link where you can leave me a voice memo, and I would love for you to do that if you have something that you want to add to the conversation. Grab a little wine and, whatever you drink, whiskey. I drink it all, and chime in with your thoughts, okay? Just a quick update. Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Jeannie has been fired, and rightfully so. Jeannie had a lot of, to do with Mary, and it seemed like, now listen, I don't never defend Mary. Mary also quit the show. Mary ain't right. She's not. She was married to her own grandpa. It's rumored that her church is more like a cult. So I'm not defending Mary. But Mary has said some stupid things as well. Racially insensitive is the nice way to say it. But she's dumb too. But, some tweets and some Facebook posts of Jeannie's have come up from 2020 that show her as being really right-wing conservative, pro-foolery, in my opinion. And then she tried to do like a... Bravo fired her. After the entire cast was like, what are you talking about? They all kind of posted their little, there's no hate. We don't accept hate statements. And she said she was free to tell her story. And then she did like a Facebook Live or Instagram Live with her and a black friend to try to explain, I'm just a Republican. I'm not a racist. Chabai, let me tell you something. Look, she's fired. Ramona should be next. There's a few more. Vicky Gunvalson can come after her. There's a few more that can come after whose politics and the way they discuss people of different cultures and the way they interact with people of different races needs to go. But what's interesting to me is that it seems like Real Housewives of Salt Lake City has a real serious issue with the people of color have race issues. And I don't know if maybe that's part of being an oppressed person in an oppressed space and being a part of a culture. Utah, the Mormons historically have prized and privileged whiteness. Literally, historically speaking, the Mormons have literally said that black people were the cursed children of Ham. That's deep in your Bible, saints. And so they have kind of used that as a theology to justify their white supremacist leanings anyway. So being a minority in that space, I do wonder how that plays out. And it's always easy to pick on the black person if you're also an Asian person, because that kind of endears you to the larger culture. Bye, Jeannie girl. Bye. Enjoy your sister wife and your husband that's trying to force you to have another baby. Speaking of babies, we actually have some great news. That is our queen, Rihanna. She's having a baby. We know that for a long time, Rihanna has mentioned wanting to be a mother and that eventually that would be something that she would do. And now she's pregnant. We've seen some lovely photos of her sort of meandering around Harlem with her child's father. in vintage Chanel, because if you're going to, you know, do a baby announcement, vintage Chanel always helps. Look, just glowing. So congratulations are in order for her. That's going to be a stylish little baby. That's going to be a fashionable little love bug. And for some reason, I've been calling the baby a boy. I don't know what it's going to be. I just know it's going to be cute and well-dressed. And I'm just always excited when someone who really wants to be a mom actually is pregnant. That's just the peak, right? It's not an accident in the sense of like, oh, I don't know about this. She has always talked about wanting to be a mother. And this is a good thing. Now, listen, I'll be transparent, right? I don't know much or care much for her child's father as soon as possible, Rocky. Him. In the past now, he said some very abhorrent things, right? He made a comment that dark-skinned black women shouldn't wear red lipstick. And now he's in a relationship with the queen of bright lipsticks for black girls, Fenty Beauty, right? He also had a lot to say about how Black Lives Matter didn't relate to him because he was in his mansion in Calabasas at one point. And then he got trapped in Sweden and he needed some, you know, he needed somebody to save a nigga. And then it was all like, oh no, racism can get me. So, you know, I'm not really sure about as soon as possible. I'm not sure if I care much for him or if he's just doing the work that Rihanna needed him to do, which was give her a baby that's going to be decent looking, right? Rihanna's going to be a wonderful mother. And I say that with as little shade as I have in my heart. Oh, honorable mentions for baby announcements. DeBrat and her wife. I don't remember her real name. You know, she goes by like Big Booty Judy or something on social media. I call it, what is she, Miracle Drops? She has a hair product that everybody likes. But her and her partner are also expecting a baby. I would have made DeBrat carry that baby because her partner is a mom and a grandma. Like, this woman has already had her work. DeBrat would be carrying that baby if it was me. However, kudos. I know they're really happy. And they look really excited about their baby. Also, the last of the list is Nick Cannon. He having like his 24th child. It ain't even news no more. They overlapping. It's a harem of little mixed women who are just getting pregnant in succession. The last child that passed away, unfortunately, it's only been a few weeks since that baby was even like born and passed. And now there's another one that's 8 months pregnant. You know, it's an author of confusion kind of situation, and I don't like it. And you know, I kind of try to question, okay, you don't want to yuck someone's yum. He keeps getting volunteers for the pregnancy pack that he has going on. But there's a part of me that just feels like, are there any watchmen on the wall for Nick Cannon's discernment? He needs a therapist. He needs a praying grandmother. He needs somebody because I get it. Okay, he can support these children. There are, you know, little light-skinned women lining up to have these children with him. However, and I don't want to say it like, I don't want to sound like the girls on Ready to Love, like I'm discriminating against the brown, you know, oh, it's the brown girls clique. As much as each woman that he seems to be making a child with since Mariah, literally you could line them heifers up against a wall, have a character from Law and Order line up, and they would not know which was the suspect. We wouldn't know. They all look alike, right? I don't know. I don't get it. Maybe he has a type. He's trying to create some sort of like some sort of super race of light-skinned babies. I don't get it. What I do get is that this seems like confusion because, I'm sorry, I know everybody's like, oh, you know, the women are complaining. It seems like he's interested. He does a maternity shoot with everybody. I do not know if I believe that he can be an authentically present father for 8 children in different households. That's just, I'm not saying that'd be shady. I don't judge him in terms of like his ability to love the kids. I just don't think any human with a full-time job can be fully present for 8 people that live with 8 different mamas. I just don't think it's possible. That's not Nick shade. I think that's all y'all out there trying to make a bunch of babies. All these babies aren't in your house. It's literally like a harem, but they're all in, like, it's too much. It's too much. It's confusion. It's, like they're overlapping. And I don't want to be shady, but I don't like it. I don't like it at all, actually. Speaking of confusion, I do want to make mention, you know, our girl Brittany is freed, my birthday twin, and I love it. And Jamie Lynn, her sister, has written a book, an ill-timed book, about her situation being Britney's less popular sister, and spends a lot of time trying to absolve herself of her role in the conservatorship. If you got a little free time and you can translate Southern. Now here's Britney is free. She's on her own Instagram. She's making her own posts. She's twirling and a posting. And you know, some of the kids are concerned about Britney. I feel like they're concerned because they don't know how to translate Southern lady behavior. You have to add these multiple factors in. Britney has been stifled and not in control of her social media since the conservatorship, which has been like almost 12 years. There's a lot of technology, a lot of shifts, a lot of changes in our attitude towards social media that Britney has not been a part of. So you add in that she's speaking like that. Then you add in Britney is like, my good girl Brit is about 40. Think about your 40 plus year old cousins and aunties and the way they post things, the level of information they give, the lack of punctuation, and that you know their tone of voice. So you got to read it with them in mind, right? So, and you know, because I too am from the South and we share the same birthday, and so I get her. You've got to read it in full Southernese. You cannot read it, you know, looking with your natural eye, right? Flesh and blood did not reveal it to you. You gotta be able to read it in good. So she'll post a picture of herself like twirling or something, or, you know, some sort of like photo of her just dancing, or, you know, a random photo of like, you know, anything. And then she's got a ton of captions about her sister and how she feels about this book. And I love it. And I just think if you've got a moment, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff that she's been holding on to. There's vacations and normal things, but there's also like, here's a picture of when my foot was broken from 2 years. Give Britney a lot of space. Give her her time. I'm going to read a caption of hers because you got to read it. January 18th, she says, in life, a lot of people say, do I matter? Try eating alone for 4 months, morning, noon, and night, Jamie Lynn. I ask myself every day, does anybody care? WTF, do I matter? I would honestly be very interested to see your pretty face in the setting I was forced to be in and asking yourself, do I matter? I didn't get to cry. I had to be strong, too strong, strong emoji. So yes, you do matter. And don't you ever think for one effing second you don't. P.S. This is my new baby one more time outfit. Smile emoji, hair flip emoji. Like you got to read it with a twang. You can't just read it, you know, without, you got to read it with that. So the punctuation or the lack thereof or the excessive amount of ellipses makes sense. So I'm still team Britney. You know, I told y'all I was saying free Britney till Britney free. Britney is free. And she's just, you know, don't worry about her. I think she's going to be just fine. But you got to read it with all of the context involved. I enjoy her. I do. I may not, maybe I shouldn't. But I think she's a delight in all the ways that a lady of her age who has literally been caged up since the millennial time would be, right? So here we go. Also of note, as a Tampa native, as a Bucks fan, Tom Brady's retiring. I'm of mixed opinion because I really didn't like Tom Brady until he got on the Bucks, and we thank him for the Super Bowl championship. So thank you for being a good team member. That's it. All right. I do want to talk really quickly about Tisha Campbell. Tisha Campbell of, she was Gina on Martin, for those of you who need a refresher and who that is. She is, she was on My Wife and Kids. She's also one of my favorite performers from a song that she created called I'm Still Here. Still, S-T-E-E-L, here. You want to enjoy yourself, go ahead and go to your YouTubes and look up her performance on like A Good Day LA or something like that. It's one of my favorite things. Tisha Campbell is, currently filming a film, like a movie or some sort of project, you know, could be on Lifetime, could be on BET Plus, I don't know. But she's in a small town. And so she recently posted a video explaining in depth that she is in a small town that does not have Uber, and for work. She said she went down to the hotel staff, asked for a number to a cab service, and they gave her a number when she called. She said when she went downstairs, and she says it with lots more. You got to watch the video. Go to her Instagram page because she says it with all of the Tisha Campbell energy, right? That she went downstairs and the car looked sketchy. The driver literally just said, get in the car. Nothing was right. And so she suspected that it was human trafficking. What is interesting is that, why I'm bringing this up, I should say, is that there have been a number of people, including the police of that town, Bronzeville, which is where she's from. Bronzeville. I don't really know the name. She didn't really say where she was, which is interesting. But the police department from that place has said, oh, we don't see any evidence of what she's saying happened. We don't see any security cameras saying that that happened. So, you know, if she would talk to us, that would be great. And so now there seems to be a little of like, a little bit of belief that like maybe she was fabricating it. Maybe she's on her Juicy Smollett and what she's saying isn't true. Can I just tell y'all something? I don't like that. I get that Tisha Campbell can be very funny. She has given me many moments. She's very funny. I get that. I think because there have been so many gray areas as far as Jussie Smollett and his situation, people are a little hyper-vigilant about things like that. But having said that, it is weird, unsettling, concerning to me that when it's someone you don't like or someone you don't approve of, or when it's a Black person or an LGBT person, we believe the police more than we believe. When it's a Black straight man, let's be honest, and he says, this happened to me, the cops brutalized me, et cetera, et cetera. And the police say, no, we didn't do that. A lot of y'all are like, F the police, defund the police, we don't believe y'all. But because sis said it, y'all are like, oh, this story's not right. The police said they didn't see that. Let's have a really frank discussion about your inability to believe Black women first. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it is totally and completely plausible and possible that the police could be a part of any kind of a cover-up involved if there is a human trafficking situation in that area. A hotel in a small city without an Uber system, there is a possibility that the hotel staff could be in on it, that the police could be in on it, or that ain't no damn security cameras. I listen to a lot of podcasts about crime. I watch a lot of Dateline, and a lot of times, like a ton of times, there are times where the police will look for a security camera and the security camera doesn't get recorded or goes to a cloud that's erased in a day, or the cameras are just there to deter crime, but they don't actually work. That's me assuming, even if nothing sinister is going on with the police department, there is no guarantee that the security cameras they're referencing are accurate, working, etc. But we know recently, there, like Twitter, a few months ago maybe, there were people talking about how they would stay in certain hotels, particularly like in DC and other areas where they would stay in hotels, and hotel staff would be in their room looking for single women while they showered. These things happen. It's disgusting. It's sad. It's frightening. It's scary. It's unsettling. But these things happen. And these people could not know who Tisha Campbell is and just see a Black lady in a hotel room and think, we can scoop her up. Or they could know who Tisha Campbell is and still see a single Black lady in a hotel room and think, we could scoop her up and get double the price. Like, you cannot pretend that that's not a thing and that it's not a real, like, valid concern. I mean, she said she ran back into the hotel. She brought it up to the staff, and they said, oh, well, why did they give you that number? Which, to me, automatically indicates that there is a something going on. Like, there was a number for real people, and there's a number for people you want to trap. And why did they trap you? It's just not right. And I just want to say, I believe her. Now, listen, she may embarrass me like Jussie, but I've been I've been embarrassed by worse. So that's my belief. And I just hope that she's okay. I hope she's safe. And I hope that anybody who's staying in that town is okay and safe. But we do need to talk about the way that some of these hotels are not safe for women to stay alone because of human trafficking. Like the crime is real. The crime is real. I do want to take a moment to honor the life. And it has taken me a long, long time to actually not cry a little bit about this. So I'm like a week late. I want to talk about honoring the life. Ooh, this one's hard. Of Andre Leon Talley, renowned fashion editor. Andre Leon Talley. We have talked about him, discussed him and his life on the show before. Talked about some of the struggles that he was facing as an elder, right? He passed away on the 18th of January. And he was in a hospital. I'm finding out that it was due to complications from COVID-19. He was a legend. He was an icon. He was a lover of beauty and style. He was a man who lived fully and brightly outright for all to see and regale. He was a man of stature, both physically, professionally, and personality-wise as well. He was a presence. And a lot of his presence really marked a shift in culture from the way fashion was in the like 70s and 80s when he kind of rose up to the time of my youth when he was a statue and we had the Naomi Campbells and the Tyra Bankses and Veronica Webbs and we had a presence of diversity to a certain extent. And I'll get to that extent in fashion. He changed the face of Vogue. His creativity, his eye, his insight, his vision changed the face of how we envision fashion and how it is displayed today. A little black boy from North Carolina, as he would have told you, an HBCU grad as well, who went on to study and progress in France and then come to New York and take over the fashion world. So I do want to take a moment to honor him for the legend that he is. And I also want to discuss some of the things that made me sad about his passing. You know, for all that we know about Andre Leon Talley, about his work, we know that his personal life unfortunately had a little bit of loneliness as an out gay man in a time in which a lot of out gay men were not welcomed, were not celebrated, and were not able to truly seek love. He made mention that he chose career. He was not, he did not have like a long lasting love, right? And in his older age, a lot of the fashion people that he thought were his friends, like Anna Wintour, and then those boys he was renting that house from that he thought were letting him own it, and then they told him he didn't own it, and they kicked him out of his own home that he had been in for years. Just sad. I know that he had a lot of friends at this church that he was going to. He was going to Abyssinian Baptist up in New York. Tamron Hall, you know, close friend of his. And he had cousins and family and friends in North Carolina. But I do always want to talk about this because this is a thing that's been on my heart as the boomers. You know, Andre was 73, and that means he's a slightly older boomer. And what has been on my heart is that I am now seeing a generation before us. And it makes me question our role as a generation as well. And that is, are we fighting for a seat at the table or are we fighting to turn the table over? Right? I always wonder that. Because Andre, for many, many years, had a seat at the table, but he never got to own the table. He never got to have the credit that he was due. He never got to run the table. He was always a guest, and they reminded him, literally right until he passed. And it made me sad. I think I mentioned this on the last show. There's no reason he shouldn't have had his own fashion magazine. There's no reason he should not have had his own things. I recently read that he was not even getting paid as much as some of the other editors at Vogue, even though he was clearly the one doing the work, the labor of the creativity of driving it to be what it is today under the helm of Anna Wintour. And so he was gifted things, gifted expensive things, and felt valued because that's where he felt his value was, right? But that gives you very, very little to keep and to show and to give. And it just, I'm just at a point of thinking, right? I'm just mulling over, and his death has really sort of given me lots to think about in terms of how we, myself and others, progress. And I'm thinking that in juxtaposition to recently on Twitter, there was a woman, I think her name is Mercedes. I don't remember her whole name, but you know, everybody clowning the hell out of her. She is one of those, I call one of the empowerment girls. That's what I call them. So she's one of those, let me coach you. Let me, you know, for the low, low price of $59.99, I can have a brunch or a course or this or that or a coaching session with you, and I'll show you how to do this basic thing. She's one of those types. And so she recently posted on Twitter, and I'm summarizing, that she, you know, works in HR, and she told a client, the applicant for a job came in. She asked how much was her asking price, and the client said $85,000 a year. And she, this is a Black woman, mind you. These are Black women interacting. She said, oh, you know, she had no idea the base price was, the base pay was up to $130,000. You know, y'all need to learn how to negotiate. You know, sis sold herself short, learn how to negotiate. And so there's been a lot of argument between y'all got to learn how to ask your worth, people, as well as the, why don't you just tell people what the base pay is? If you see another sister, if you see a young struggling Black brother, if you see somebody who's your peer, help them out, because we don't automatically know that stuff. And so it's got me thinking, because it's like, you know, the argument of you need to know your worth. It is very, very hard to know your worth when you have historically been undersold. I'm going to say that again. It is very, very hard to know your worth in any setting if you have historically been undersold. When I was in school, we talked a lot about, I forget which racist white person what was, but they talk about how they got the land from the Native Americans for trinkets and beads. If you've never had something, anything looks like something. If you historically have come from a people, like many of us who are African Americans or even immigrants, or any other, you know, race of people that have been systematically oppressed and kept away from wealth in this nation, when you get a certain point in your life and you're making more than anybody in your family, see, that sister that said $85,000 is enough may come from parents that make $40,000 to $50,000. So $85,000 feels like, whoo, baby, I'm getting my worth. She had no idea that the base was $100,000. And the same thing applies to like an Andre Leon Talley. He loved to tell us that he got his start as a young, sweet, southern boy in North Carolina. He learned a lot about style and fashion from the church mothers and the hats and the brooches of the civil rights era segregated South. Would he have known his worth? He's getting more than anybody else he knows. He's accomplishing more than any of the other people in his family. You don't know your worth. And so people will sell you short, because there's a lack of transparency between what people are getting paid, and also for many of us as African Americans, an imbalanced view of what wealth and money looks like, because you know what other people are getting, but at the same time, you know you're doing better than the people around you. That level of worth is distorted, right? So I think the solution is whatever your worth is, add 20K. That's my answer. Think in your mind, what would I like to get paid? Then add 20,000 to it. That's a safe bet. But you know, we just got to be careful. I don't want us to be a generation of people who, like our boomer friends, keep casting pearls before swine, selling off their land, selling off their assets for a little cash, selling off their value and their talents for a little cash. In the words of Master P, at a seat at the table, if the white man was going to give me 10,000, I knew it was worth a million. Do you know how much insight that takes? Because so many of us don't have 10K in the bank and would be excited about it. It takes a lot of strength to hold out on something fast for what you know is going to pay out in the long run. It takes a whole lot of strength. And so I just wish that strength for all of us, because the key for us as a next generation, I'm saying this to my Gen Xers, I'm saying this to my millennials, I'm saying this to my Gen Z. I don't think nobody that young listen to me though. But, you know, we are at that point in which we are striving, we are accomplishing. And I don't think it's enough for us to just be glad to be invited to the party when they wouldn't have a party without us. We bring all the style, we bring all the food, and that's what I'm saying. We got to start owning our stuff. And sometimes that means we got to hold out just a smidge. And when I say hold out, I don't necessarily mean don't work. I'm never going to tell you not to work, right? I work now. When I say hold out, I mean, don't be so damn excited to be hired that you never think about owning. Now, I will say this. Everybody don't want to be a boss. Everybody doesn't want to own. And that's fine. That's not everybody's temperament. That's not everybody's spirit. I am like a baby entrepreneur between the real estate and all the entertainment stuff. And I just don't sleep. I get it. Like, you know, I totally get that that's not everybody's steez. And that's fine. But what I'm saying is, for those of you who know you have greatness inside of you and have an ability to stay the hell awake and work all the time, do not let that talent be exploited by someone else so much that you miss the chance to own. You're the number one employee. You work harder than everybody else. You could probably run that company, can't you? So leave and start your own, because they ain't gonna let you do that. Or just start your own. Lay the foundation for yourself and be able to segue out. I'm saying that because I wish that that's what Andre Leon Talley had done. I wish we would have gotten a Vogue-esque style magazine that gave all of the beauty that he had at the height of his fame, so he could have started and kept something, a legacy of his own. And we must be his legacy. Those of us who honor the life and the work that he did, those of us who saw an Andre Leon Talley and were proud of how loud and out loud and how kind and how hardworking he was. We must all be his legacy. Okay. Ooh, child, now that I got that out of my system, I'm just going to keep you in the sad place. I have to talk about another thing that really hurt my heart this week, and that was the passing of former Miss USA, I think it was 2019, Chesley Christ. For those of you who are not familiar, I encourage you to Google her. She's stunningly beautiful. I heard she was an AKA. I could be wrong. But she was a former Miss USA. She was a correspondent on Extra, did a lot of news work, and was just gorgeous, a light. And unfortunately, took her own life this week. She chose to end everything in a very shocking way for those of us who are the least bit familiar with her. I don't know if you guys remember, a few years back, there was a time where Miss USA, Miss Teen USA, and Miss America are all African-American, all Black. And they were doing a lot of promo and photos. They did a beautiful Essence cover together. The three of them were like the three little pretty musketeers for a while. And that sort of, you know, that if you don't remember her name, you might remember that time period. I wanted to bring it up because when I saw that she had ended her life, I was truly shocked, because I literally just seen her on Extra doing well, looking great, looking like she had a lot going on for herself. Knew that she was extremely close to her mother as a fan and follower of hers. And I wanted to talk about it because two things. She was in her 30s. And around that time, I'm being very transparent with you if you're listening. I want you to understand why I'm being transparent. When I was 30, I was about a year, a few months really, into my caregiver journey. And being a caregiver, turning 30, having confusion about every aspect of my life, and on top of that, the immense responsibility of caring for my mother, who was spontaneously paralyzed, and my own, you know, controversial faith questions. I was in the darkest most convoluted mentally space of my life. I ain't all the way right now, let's be honest. But in all honesty, there's never been a time in my life in which my thoughts were darker. It was in my 30s. I went through a complete darkness of the soul. And, you know, the astrology girls call it the Saturn return. I was smack dab in and I had it bad. And there was a period of time in which my despair was so bad that for a period of time I really thought, you know what? I'm the problem. And if I get rid of myself, everybody else's life will get better. And I just need to figure out. My brain told me that there was something I was doing that was causing all these problems in my life. And I can't seem to fix myself and I can't seem to fix the situation. And maybe if I were dead, my mother would get some help. Maybe if I were dead, if I were just not a part of this, everything would be better. And I seriously started to feel like that in my mind. If I could just figure out how to do it peacefully, maybe that would fix everything. Maybe that would make every bad part go away. Why am I telling you this? Two things as we reflect, as well as Regina King's son, Ian, 26 years old. He also committed, he took his own life recently as well. And a lot of us are starting to ask, well, what's going on? He looks so happy. These people look happy. They look fine. And I want you to understand what goes on in the mind of a person. It's not always like, I'm sad, I'm depressed. It is the mindset that I am so sad and so depressed and so in pain, and I don't see how this will end. And your mind says that you could be this bad and feel this way forever. You do not see the light at the end of the tunnel of feeling bad. I want to explain the difference between normal things you feel bad about and that suicidal ideation thing that happens, right? You lose a loved one, you are grieving. You're aware that you're grieving. You're aware that they're gone forever, but you're also aware that in a certain amount of time, you might feel differently. It won't be as heavy. You have a breakup with someone. You are angry, you are sad, but you know eventually you're going to jump on another nigga soon, right? There's a seeming end. It may not be your version of an end, but there is an end to the pain that you can foresee at some point, right? The despair comes in when you don't see how this will ever get better. For me, I knew in my soul that there was no better outcome. That's what I, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to have to take care of my loved one and the only outcome is them dying. And I could not see a positive end. I could not see my own survival. The only thing that stopped me, two things that stopped me. At the time, my grandmother and grandfather were alive. Only my grandfather's alive right now. I could not see myself putting them through that pain. I also could not see myself ending my life and my godchildren. You know, I talk about them all the time. I adore those two kids. But the truth is, having them in my life saved my life because my love for them stopped me from thinking, I don't want them to learn about grief or death. Because I chose to leave them. I'm not going to choose to leave them. Their presence saved me because I didn't want to put children through grief. And that's when I realized I needed to talk to my therapist about what I was feeling and get on some medication. And I thank God that I have not had that level of depression and despair since then. Why am I saying all that to you? Because I see a lot of people in their response and reactions to Ian, Alexander, Regina King's son, in their responses and reaction to beautiful Chesley Crist, sort of ask, well, you know, what was it? Like, you know, was she, you know, I've seen everything from did they know Jesus to, what all kinds of crazy things that I've seen. You know, did their families know? There's also this thing where y'all love to say, check on your strong friends. And you're not wrong, but I want you to understand how that's not going to work. Your strong friends are strong because they have figured out how to navigate life looking strong. That doesn't mean they're strong for real. It's more like they're lead crystal. Those of you who are not initiated to lead crystal, heavy weighted crystal things, glass things that are heavy, you pick them up. It's like, ooh, you know, you kind of brace yourself for like, I didn't expect it to be this heavy. It looks durable. It looks like it's strong. But all it takes is one shake for it to fall and crash and crack everywhere. That's what your strong friend that you're thinking about that might be struggling or depressed is. And so if all you do is check in, there's a high chance that that very strong friend is a very good pretender. I say that especially targeting our Black excellence types, right? I would say Black women, but I know brothers are the same way. We know, we have learned, if nothing else, from our family, from our churches, from our fraternities and sororities, from our groups, that we have to put on that face. We have to smile. We have to, you know, be professional. And so to a certain extent, we have all kind of learned to put on a facade of okay, no matter what. I don't want you to see the cracks because the cracks are not a part of my veneer and it's not a part of my look. And so we say, check on your strong friend. Your strong friend knows how to answer you, so you'll leave them alone. Your strong friend's going to say, well, you know, I've been through a little something. I'm not really feeling that great, but you know what? I'm okay. Your strong friend's going to say, you know what? It could be worse. Your strong friend's going to say, you know, other people have it worse than me. I just need to focus on gratitude. I just need to try a little harder. Your strong friend is going to say, everything's good. Do you guys want to go for drinks? Your strong friend might say, I'm just having a rough day. Let's go out now. And I'm saying all that to say, what you have to do is cultivate a fertile foundation of openness all the time. All of the time, not just a check-in and not just, well, you and I. That means that when you hear of other people struggling, you don't call them and kiki and talk about, oh, you know, that bitch, you know, she crazy in the head. No, because what you're also telling your friend is that if she or he goes through something, they can't trust you not to do the same thing. You have to cultivate a fertile ground of caring all the time so that when that person is struggling, they know that you're a safe place and that they can go to you for the help. You know, when I was in Christian school, they used to tell you to study the word all the time so that when you're in peril, you'll have Bible verses in your mind. Don't read it when you're in struggle, right? So I want you to translate that because all y'all saints, I know some of y'all are thus hashtag the saints trademark listening. That's the same thing we have to do with our friends and our loved ones so that our strong friends can know, I'm feeling a little off. Let me call so-and-so. Because even when I've heard that I've heard the conversations that I've had with her and she's real open. And maybe they'll be real open with, maybe they'll meet me where I am. Maybe they won't come to me with cliches and bumper stickers and Bible verses that are out of context. Maybe that person will actually listen and pray with me and hold my hand. Maybe they'll take me to the therapist. Maybe that person will come over and just listen and let me cry. Like, that's what I'm saying. You have to consistently, not just check, not just, hey girl, you okay? Because who the hell gonna tell you they not? Who? I used to work in a mall and my whole thing was I was like a greeter at Victoria's Secret for back when I was young and fine, honey, and Victoria's Secret had a men's line, they used to put me out front to, you know, offer lotion and stuff to the boys out front because I used to be cute. Still am. She's got it. And one of the things was, you know, people would come into your store and you just sort of, you know, vacantly say, hi, how are you doing today? And most people would sort of absentmindedly say, I'm fine, and keep walking. I'm fine. I'm okay. No one really said if they weren't fine. It'd be very rare. And I mean, like 1 in 100 to 200 for a person to literally say, hey, you know, my day's kind of crappy. Let me just, you know, I'm in here trying to get something to boost my spirit. People are not honest with their feelings. They're not always honest with themselves because, you know, a lot of people are faking it to make it, even in depression. And a lot of that comes from that toxic positivity that a lot of us as Americans in particular get in our mind. Those of us that are at these, you know, prosperity churches and things like that, everything is, I smile, even though I'm hurt, see, I smile. That's that mindset of no one wants to see you down in the dumps. So just tell yourself you're happy and eventually you'll believe it. Speak over yourself. You'll be fine. And so to a certain extent, even when you're not fine, that check-in ain't going to do what you think it's going to do. I'm not saying don't check in. I am saying be consistent. Be consistent in laying fertile ground so that our friends and loved ones know if you can't talk to nobody else, you can damn sure talk to me, and I'm not going to make you feel no kind of way about the thoughts in your head. I hope that, listen, I've had people I haven't talked to in years come and inbox me because I've been transparent about my shit. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful for that. And I, if I can just let somebody know, listen, you ain't beyond help, and you can come out. If you feel like there's no light at the end of the tunnel, baby, I got some flashlights and a match. We're going to make a light. That's what I'm saying. Being transparent about what we go through so that loved ones and friends can be honest about what they're going through and know that we can't fix each other, but we can support each other. Right? That's what I'm saying. And it just hurt my heart. Because she was such a beautiful, bright light and admired by so many people. And she was so good at the face that the despair was this quiet, private thing that she didn't trust anyone, including herself, to deal with. Y'all, don't let it get that bad. Don't let it get that bad. And let me say this, as a, you know, I have listeners of all genders and identities that listen. But this is confidential to my Black girls because I get it. We get raised, especially Black Americans. If you know, I ain't never been nowhere else. I don't know if y'all got this in Africa. I don't know if y'all got this in France. I don't know if y'all got this in the Caribbean. Canada, shout out, all right? But here in America, especially in the South, there is this idolizing of the strong Black woman, right? You can bring home the bacon and fry it in a pan. Never let him forget he a man. Go to church, lead the praise and worship, do the usher board, lead the finance ministry, come home, make several babies. Then you've got to do it all and not complain and not worry about it. And you know, if you get a little down, what you're supposed to do is write in your gratitude journal and you tell the Lord about it. You pray your gospel music and you don't need nobody but Jesus. This is the way we are raised from birth. Do you hear what I'm saying? I want y'all to stop that now because everybody needs somebody. You don't need nobody, Jesus, but Jesus. Jesus had 12 disciples. He had a whole squad of homeboys and homegirls. If we talk about Mary and Martha and the crew, he did not do it alone. So why do you think you should do it alone? Just you and Jesus. And Jesus is looking around like, hey, I got a whole squad of friends. What's up with you? I need you guys to leave that, shed the superwoman, because we ain't getting shit from it, first of all. It's just people piling more stuff on us. Stop judging other women that need things. Let me tell you a story. In like late 2020, a friend of mine, because of COVID, we couldn't do much, but for her birthday, we had like an adult slumber party. So it was like a house full of her friends. So all of us from different walks of life, some of us knew each other. A large swath of us were multiple groups who didn't know each other. Still had a good time, had a wang dang doodle. So I'm sitting in the house, it's the next morning. I said, I need some water, I take my medicine, child. So another lady who's a little bit older than me says, oh girl, you got high blood pressure? Like, I got high blood pressure too. No, I don't. She's not with that shit. I said, no, I got an antidepressant. I got to take it every day. Small, you know, I'm on a low dose, baby. I ain't on none, you know. So she says to me very seriously, very urgently, very panicked faced, oh, no. Black women, I don't believe in Black women taking those. And I'm looking around like, I didn't know we was taking a damn vote. You voting on me? I'm not. Did not know. I said, what? I'm sorry, what? She said, no, they try to give that to us to control our minds. And, you know, I just don't believe we need those things. All you need is some quiet time and some prayer and Jesus. That's all you need. Mind you, she was the craziest one in the bunch. She needed some pills, too. So I just looked at her real quiet. I said, ma'am, if I didn't take these pills, I was about to go meet Jesus. So if it's between me praying and dying, or me taking a pill and praying and staying alive, I'm going to take my pill. She got real quiet then. I'm telling you all because I'm aware of the ways we judge each other sometimes for our choices. We want to be our best, brightest, best, excellent selves. But I urge you right now, do not let anybody stop you from your healing. Do not let anybody stop you from your wholeness. Do not let anybody's opinion stop you from what's best for you. I'm telling you, honestly, that means you got to hide your pills from your mama, hide them. If that means you getting peace and being well. That means if you can't tell your daddy you go to therapy, don't tell him. He probably needs some therapy too. That means if your baby daddy is mad that you want better health and you want to go to premarital counseling, oh well. Because your wholeness is where you need to reside. Without shame, without judgment, you stand up. When you stand in your peace, all the water's got to get calm and everybody needs to move at your pace. Do you see what I'm saying? And those who can't keep up, let them go. Let them go. When you make that decision, because I was doing that for a while. I was hiding my therapy sessions, hiding my pills, hiding my little stuff. And for, you know, and I just got so overwhelmed. I was like, listen, I'm at therapy. I need it. Y'all about to kill me. Okay. And when I said it, I got free. And every other week it was like, well, you at your therapy? Yes, I am. And you'll wait till I get back. And that's not being disrespectful. I do want to be clear about that. I say things very tongue in cheek and my family knows that that's the way I'm, you know, that's not being disrespectful. That is standing on your boundary of I need to work on what I need to get whole or the outcome is going to be very negative, not just for me, but for everyone around me. Get clear and stand up in it and don't be ashamed to say, this is what I need. I need help. And y'all can't help me. Let me be clear on that, because sometimes your family, well, why you ain't tell me? You ain't helpful. Okay? You've been around, give me bad advice, making me feel bad about myself. You're not helpful right now. So I'm going to get a professional. That's not disrespect. That's the truth. Lord. So I'm hopeful. I am prayerful. I am I'm hoping that these discussions we have will lend themselves to some revelations and some peace. And to let more people know that they're not alone. They don't have to be alone. You can come talk. Listen, I don't always invite y'all to be in my inbox like that. I do. But, you know, at least like if you just need somebody to read your email, just email me. Like, don't suffer alone. If your thoughts have been leaning towards darkness and suicidal ideation of any sort, I'm not no real professional, honey. I got my degree from the Iyanla School to fix my life. So, you know, don't hold me against it. But I just don't want y'all out here suffering alone. And I don't want y'all feeling like you got to hold a veneer of perfection. You don't have to, because ain't none of us perfect. We all fall short. But in God, we all perfect in his eyes, right? We all loved in his eyes. So ain't none of us better than the other person. None of us is, you know, that, oh, so-and-so got it all together. Let me tell you what I've learned as an adult woman. The very women you think got it all together are a hot ass mess. So free yourself from that. Okay, you doing the best you can. And if you need some help, if you need to take a break, if you need to work on your soul and your spirit, you do that. You do that. And I love you. I really do. I really love people. I ain't got to know you well to want you to do well. Okay, God loves you. I love you. Be blessed. That's how I'm going to end this today, because it's been a serious, I started off silly, but I got real serious at the end. But I love you. I want wellness. I want wholeness for you. Be blessed, my babies. We'll be back soon, hopefully with some light, fun topics in the near future. Be blessed. Have a wonderful day. Mwah.